You're listening to Irish Sports Talk.
Hello, Notre Dame fans. Welcome to Irish Sports Talk. This is episode 440. Randall's here, and we're going to talk about Notre Dame's loss to end the season at Stanford, 20-38 loss. Heartbreaker, because the game was a lot closer than the score would indicate. Randall, first off, Thanksgiving week this past week, you were out of the state, and I had a lot of family stuff going on. Do you still have that Thanksgiving and Notre Dame loss hangover, or are you back to normal? Because I know I still have that hangover.
I'm kind of over the Thanksgiving thing, but I'm still trying to deal with the loss on Saturday and just another off season of talking about what can go better.
All right. Well, let's just jump into it then. I want to read you off the different numbers for these two teams. And Randall, if I would be reading off, I'm going to read off just overall team stats. And by Notre Dame's numbers, they should have won this game. First downs are almost the same. Notre Dame 17, Stanford 18. Third downs, Notre Dame converted 8 of 19, while Stanford only converted 2 of 11. Total yardage, Notre Dame had 415 to Stanford's 328. So 70 or about 80 more yards there. Passing yards, Notre Dame at 260 to 175 for Stanford. And I'm somewhat abbreviating some of these just to make them easier to remember. Rushing, almost equal, 155 yards, 152 yards, 44 attempts for Notre Dame, 38 for Stanford. And there was a time a few years ago when if Brian Kelly's team rushed for over, was it 40 times, they won the game?
Yeah.
And if I just told you those numbers, it'd be pretty clear, oh, well, Notre Dame won that game. They converted much higher percentage of their third downs. They had almost 100 more yards. They didn't win, though. And the big differentiating numbers are there's two of them. There's 3 turnovers to 0, and then there's 8 penalties for 81 yards versus 3 for 30. Those two things were the big differences when you look at things that just didn't end up going Notre Dame's way.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, Notre Dame's turnover differential was incredible, and it went the complete opposite direction. And it's like we talked about last couple podcasts that if Notre Dame doesn't get turnovers, they have a hard time winning the game. And that happened again on Saturday.
Well, I think even if the turnovers would have been even, I think they could have won this game. I think they would have won, and they at least would have been one possession game.
Yeah. There's so many things this game that it could have gone the complete opposite direction. When you look at the score, 38-20, it sounds horrible, but it could have. I don't think it was as bad as what the score shows. I mean, it could have gone the other way. It's not like Stanford came in and, you know, played incredible for four quarters. They didn't. I still think Notre Dame, it's just like the Miami game. I think if they play again, you know, Notre Dame would have a chance. It's not like Stanford is a better team than Notre Dame. Notre Dame just made a lot of mistakes and just dumb penalties.
They had, to me, there was a stretch in the game where Notre Dame could have taken control. It was the end of the first half with about 5 minutes to go. They drove 69 yards, kicked a field goal. And the offense, Stanford was playing a little soft, a little more prevent, but Notre Dame only got a field goal. They had opportunities to get a touchdown. And then it was pretty much, there was a minute and a half left over. They stopped Stanford, forced them to punt, and then tried a few plays, but then Notre Dame just ran out of the clock. And then, beginning of the second half, Notre Dame gets the ball, one play, 75 yards for EQ and what I think was his most impressive play of the season. He had speed I haven't seen all year, and determination. They give up a field goal to Stanford after that, and then they're forced to punt. They have 9 plays, 29 yards, but they're forced to punt. And then they are in phenomenal field position thanks to Chris Fink finally has a good play.
Finally.
And then they get negative, end up with net negative 2 yards. They're in the red zone.
On the 19-yard line.
And if it wouldn't have been for those 2 penalties, they at least would have converted a first down.
Yeah.
And I think they would have scored a touchdown.
Yeah.
On the first and 20, whatever it was, they got 9 or 11 yards on a run by Stepherson.
Yeah.
And it was just frustrating because here they could have taken the game over and they didn't. And then what ends up happening, Stanford has a 70-yard drive, scores a touchdown, and then the wheels really come off the train or off the wagon. Interception, and then a touchdown for Stanford. And then the kickoff fumble by C.J. Sanders and a touchdown for Stanford. So that you can't put on the defense because they're put in position. This defense will give up yards, and they just didn't have enough room to force a turnover or to stop the Stanford offense.
Well, I will say this. I would say Stanford could take after that game, they should be allowed to take the tight end U title away from Notre Dame and keep it for themselves, because Stanford did, maybe we get into more with the tight ends then, but Stanford did what Notre Dame should have done all year with their tight ends and big receivers. We heard over it irritated every time I heard it in the game. Oh, they're big tight ends and they're big receivers. You know, they just can't, Notre Dame's defensive backs just can't match up against them. True, Notre Dame has the exact same scenario. They have big tight ends. They have big receivers. But that's never an issue. They can't get a jump ball versus a short cornerback. They can't. Stanford receivers and tight ends are what we hoped Notre Dame would be going into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't seen any of that. But what I'm saying is I think this game, it's not like Notre Dame was just outplayed. There's things that could be fixed. There's things, you can see things that could be changed and fixed where Notre Dame could win this game.
Oh, definitely.
So it's not as bad as what everybody
It's not nearly as bad, because even if you just take away the turnovers, an awful pass by Brandon Wimbush where he never even looked at the linebacker who showed blitz and then dropped back. He never even looked at him, threw it right into his arms. And then, obviously, the C.J. Sanders fumble, and then the pick at the end of the, towards the end of the game, too. I mean, he was open.
Well,
and the ball is just underthrown.
Here's what, okay, the season went, I predicted a 9-3 season, predicted loss to Georgia and Stanford, and I said they'd lose to somebody like USC or Miami. And that's what happened. And that's what we hoped would happen. You give this, so my biggest thing going into this, what I hate that this was the last game, well, you said the bowl game, but now this offseason, listen to everybody whine and complain about Brian Kelly and all these different things. And people can't see how good this team was. Yeah, they stumbled and faltered kind of at the end of the season. And that's an issue. I mean, that's something we should get into. You know, what can they change? But just, I'll give credit to, was it Tyler James, I believe. Let me find his tweet here. Yeah. He said, this is just asking for trouble, but if you believe Brian Kelly should be fired, when was the last time Notre Dame lost that your action wasn't the coach should be fired?
You're saying, yeah, it's just, yeah.
It's a natural reaction.
Yeah.
And if you go back and look at what this team has done, Michael Birch tweeted out some stats. Among the top 12 in the college football rankings, Notre Dame beat 3 Power 5 teams with at least 8 wins. That's tied for second. They beat 6 FBS teams with a winning record. That's tied for second. Played 5 currently ranked AP top 25 teams, which is tied for first. Played 9 FBS teams with a winning record, which is first. Notre Dame had an incredibly tough schedule. And so, in my mind, if you look at all this, if Notre Dame... here's the other thing. Before the game started, did you see what they were saying on game day about the team? They were trying to decide who should be that two-loss team that could get into the playoffs.
Yeah, and to be, it was set up so that if these three teams that it showed their resume,
yeah,
it was set up so that they went out and also their top opponents went out as well.
Okay.
So Notre Dame was the third one with C. It would assume that they beat Stanford, and then either USC ends up being the Pac-12 champ or continues to win, and Stanford in order to keep up that that strength of schedule and strength of resume.
It showed like all the numbers, strength of schedule, and it even listed they would not be a conference champion. And everyone on College Game Day picked Notre Dame.
Well, they picked. Some of them said, Team C, but some of them said B or C. I think there was two that picked just Notre Dame, and there was two that picked B or C.
But they all thought that Notre Dame would have a chance.
They all thought that that Notre Dame, that unknown C, that faithless Team C, that they would have, they should be.
If you just go by the numbers, they did point out, if you go by if you watch the teams, you know, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, the eye test, yeah.
But Notre Dame isn't talked about in that situation. And of course, the team that nobody mentioned was Ohio State, and that's who everybody thinks should get in as a two-loss team. So,
not everyone.
Well, every time any analyst, anybody's talking about Ohio State, like, oh, you know, they still have a chance again. They still have a chance. Their chances never die. They could be 6-6, and you know, this and this happens, they could still get in. Anyways, then I keep seeing tweets about conference championships too. I'd wanted you to ask. I mean, or being in a conference.
Yeah.
Where are you at this point?
With Notre Dame being in a conference?
Yes.
Well,
would that help them?
It would help in this instance.
See,
for right now, forget about the playoff thing. I think one problem with this team at the end of the year, after it seemed that the team started falling off midway through Wake Forest game, even though we watched the game and even the ESPN winning index showed that the game was never really in question. It was Notre Dame winning 99% from the end of the first half on. You could still see that, well, the defense was giving up a lot of yards and points. And then clearly in Miami, things had come off. But after, even against Navy and then here again against Stanford, I think there was times when this team didn't know what they were playing for anymore. And not, I think they knew what they were playing for after Georgia because it was one loss and they still believed they had a chance to get into the playoff, and they definitely did.
Yeah.
Would they have won out? But after you get that second loss, what are you playing for?
So you're going to settle for a conference championship?
Well, that's better than nothing.
Well, why not settle for a Big Six bowl game? And try to win that.
We're not getting that either.
Well, what I'm saying is nothing would change. Nothing in the player, that's not going to change. They still had something to play for. Some of the players even mentioned the playoffs. But to me, who cares about a conference champion? And here's the thing. What would have helped? Notre Dame still wouldn't have been in the conference championship this year.
You mean if they had been in
They lost to Miami.
Well,
if they're in the ACC, they're not getting in the conference championship.
You often have one loss. Miami also has one loss, Randall.
I know, but they beat in a head-to-head. They would beat.
Yeah.
So,
You're picking this year.
What I'm saying is this year should definitely not change, right? Because they wouldn't be in a conference championship anyways.
It probably helps more if at the beginning of the year you have an early loss or maybe even a second loss. You still have a chance to win your conference.
Maybe, so, but
if Notre Dame is able to be playing for a playoff spot into November, then no, I don't want to be thinking about a conference championship. But I think it would help players stay motivated if they have something ahead of them. You need to be motivated, and it's hard to be self-motivated and just say I'm just going to play the best that I can, only for pride in myself. It's hard to do that every day. And for every minute of every game. But if there is something there, hey, if we win this game, we're one step closer to the conference championship. It's real. Well, motivation is real, and that is motivation.
I agree. Here's kind of my issue. Before you even start talking about the conference championship, something to play for, I think Notre Dame and the players need to stop saying, oh, it's just another opponent. We talked about last week, the faceless opponent. That has got to stop. And, okay, they hyped up the 33 trucking, Josh Adams, but Josh Adams was like, he doesn't think about that. BS, he thought about that a lot, and I think that's part of the reason he hasn't been playing last week. These guys need, I don't know if you want to call it swagger or what, but something has to change where it's not just another game. We don't care who the opponent is. We don't care about the Heisman talk. We don't care about this and this. Talk about it.
For me, forget about the Heisman. I don't care about the Heisman, but I do care about opponents. And we often talk about, when we're talking about maybe Michigan State, oh, they really didn't play that well against some unknown school or whoever it might be. Well, they don't need to play a great game against a lower competition team, but you need to play, and I think that's what you often see. Sometimes those other, Notre Dame doesn't need to play great against Miami of Ohio to beat them. They don't need to play great against Temple this year to beat Temple. But you do need to play great against Georgia, USC, Miami of Florida, and Stanford. And that's way more important than just being, it's more important to play great in those four games than it is to be consistent the entire season.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you get. When you say it's faithless, you're trying to just be consistent, but you need to be great against really good competition.
Well, basically what I'm saying is they need to stop being so humble. Maybe not, don't go as far as being the Miami team of the Catholics versus convicts. But I'm saying, like, don't try to ignore the elephant in the room. Don't try to say, oh, you're not worried about this and that. Talk about it. Be, you know, say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm in contention for this and that. Who cares? You got to be confident. And I think there was so much pressure on Josh Adams. Well, maybe we could say it didn't work. They tried the 33 trucking and it didn't work. Maybe that added pressure to him, which kind of goes against what I'm saying. But they need to convince him that he is that type of guy, and he needs to, I don't know. But something's got to change. It's not going to be a conference. I think just kind of the attitude of, you know, we can win these big games. We are Notre Dame. And they don't come back like other teams. When this team has a bad loss, they don't come back like other teams do. You see a lot of other teams have a bad loss, and the next week they come out, and teams are scared to play them because they know they lost the week before. That's not the case with Notre Dame.
I wonder. I agree with you that, yeah, you're not always playing for a conference every year either. And so at that point, what are you playing for? And that's on Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly needs to find a way to motivate the team. And maybe it is play for yourself. Play to put yourself in a position to get a starting job next year if you're a second stringer. Or play to put yourself in a position to get an evaluation from the NFL for this season. I don't know, but there needs to be motivation. Maybe it's not a conference championship, but it seemed like.
Well, here's the other thing with the just to add to the conference, the argument. Okay, let's say Notre Dame joins a conference. They play how many conference games? Every other team is playing these worthless opponents. Well, Notre Dame isn't going to be, if Notre Dame joins ACC next year. You know who their non-conference games are going to be?
Stanford, USC.
Stanford, Navy, USC, and
every other year,
and some other, and Michigan, you know, Michigan State, Georgia, or Ohio State. It's going to get harder.
Yeah.
And so, well, not necessarily hard, just stay the same, basically. I mean, you're not going to, they need to change. If they wanted something to change, they need to start scheduling like these other teams. I mean.
No. Well, because that's how we're going to win, though.
That's how you're going to win. That's how Ohio State, Alabama.
That's how we're going to get into the playoff, if we're not in a conference.
Yeah.
Is by having the schedule that Notre Dame has.
Well, and you need to do it if you're in a conference.
Yeah, you do. And they can maybe improve it so that it is a little maybe rearrange the schedule a little bit. But it's hard to know what teams are going to be good or not.
Oh, I agree.
Because it changes but so quick.
Look at Alabama scheduling some who knows what in the the week that Notre Dame's playing Miami, or was it the following week? That's strategy. I'll give it to him. That's strategy, because instead of, they're having an exhibition game in the middle of the season. Because it is hard to go undefeated. I don't care. Look at Wisconsin. That's why I think Wisconsin should
Alabama.
Be up there.
Look at Alabama. They didn't
the top.
They didn't go undefeated.
Exactly, and they even did that.
But Randall, but I am not a fan. I would rather play tough opponents and give more credibility to the teams that have a loss than a Wisconsin, whose out of conference schedule is crap, and is beating everyone in the Big Ten so far.
I agree. I'm saying it's going to make more of a difference in scheduling than joining a conference. It's not going to give the players. I don't know. I'm not convinced. If you want to look at it that way, they're how many of Notre Dame's opponents are playing in a conference championship this week? They can go out and play
three of them at least.
It's Miami, USC, Stanford,
and Georgia. So four.
And Georgia. So
we're pretty much playing.
There you have it. You couldn't even win against the teams that are playing for the con, except USC. And by the way, I commented on somebody's Twitter about Notre Dame can't win the big games. And then I got caught up, getting all these tweets because other people were replying, but said Notre Dame didn't win any big games. Isn't USC a big game? They're 10-2 going for a conference championship, and you blew them out. Difference is it was at home. That's the one difference. It wasn't on the road. It was at home. But still, that was a huge game, and Notre Dame won in convincing fashion.
Speaking of, go ahead.
One more thing. I think the biggest issue with this year, I think with the last couple games going the way they did, I think we saw the signs of the strength and conditioning and just different things not being around for more than a year.
We talked about it a little bit the other week. I don't think that's what it is as much as just quality depth.
Well, both of that. I'm just saying, like, all the bad coaching, this Brian Kelly should have made these changes before last year.
Yeah.
If it would have been done a year earlier, I think this season could have been a lot different. But you're getting into those. This is where the mental part. We saw they basically had a mental breakdown this game.
But let's talk about what happened. Because I think what has happened in all three losses is that the quarterback play has not been close to par. And I think Brandon Wimbush, I think he can do it. We know, I haven't seen him in practice besides the spring game, and they had the fall scrimmage as well. But haven't seen him a lot in practice. But from all the reports, everyone, including Kirk Herbstreit, was saying that he's seen him in practice, has seen him make these throws, says he can make any throw. It's just confidence. And to get the confidence, he needs to do repetition. And it'll just take time.
And it's mechanics, too.
Well, but I think that comes with the confidence.
Yeah,
because
you're
right. In practice, he's not making those mechanical mistakes.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If he doesn't make improvement from now in the bowl game, which Brian Kelly said he's going to be the starter, and I'm glad. I think he should be.
Yeah.
But if there's going to be how many weeks? Probably around 4 weeks until the bowl game. If there's not drastic improvement in that time, I don't think he can be the starter. Or at the very least, there needs to be competition for the starting job in 2018.
Well, I think
Tony and I were talking a little bit about this while we were watching the Stanford game.
Here's what comes back. We said before the season, the backup quarterback is always the best quarterback. And it's proven true this year. I think with this year, I think he can do a lot. It's things he can fix with coaching or whatever. I think the one thing that needs to change, I don't think Tommy Rees should be the quarterback coach. And the thing is, it's not going to change because he's Brian Kelly's, I don't know what you want to call him.
Well, he's not even an assistant coach right now.
I know, but Brian Kelly's not going to let him go.
I don't know.
He basically promised him. It's all he did when he was a quarterback. Now he's a coach getting paid.
But he was benched for Golson.
There are reports that they say that in practice he looks, the things that they're doing in practice are actually like things they do in the game.
What do you mean?
Well, we're hearing more reports of what they did. Brian Driscoll talked about it. He said in practice, which he was a coach, he coached football and played. What he had seen when Sanford was coach and coached before him, the stuff they did in practice was not stuff you would do in a game. It made no sense. It looked like he said it looked like stuff you would do in a football camp.
It looks like George Whitfield stuff.
Probably. And that's actually changed. This year they were practicing stuff that they could actually use in the game, and so they have made an improvement.
Okay, before you go on, that could very well be true, and I hope it is, but Deshaun Kizer gave Sanford a lot of credit of turning him into the quarterback that he was.
Of course he will.
Well, I'm just saying.
Yeah, and what happened
between
the first and second year?
He did not get better. The offensive line took a step back.
And Kizer did not get better.
Will Fuller was gone. You forget all these other missing pieces, Randall. It doesn't just come down to one player.
I know, but...
Although I'm saying it comes down to one player, the reason that they can't move the...
But I'm just saying, not just the throw, it was just like how he did things. It wasn't the throws, it's just how he did things. His mechanics as well. I mean, he didn't get better. Yeah, we can give him a lot of credit because he came in and was ready and played phenomenal.
Well, we had no idea
what he was saying. Why are you saying
that you think Reese should go if you think he might be doing a good job?
What I'm saying is I don't think Sanford was a good... I think Sanford was way overhyped.
I've
always said that.
I also remember LaFlora.
Oh, he was...
Which was before, was also overhyped.
You mean from what I said?
No.
Oh, just period.
Yeah, just in...
Mike Sanford was the Alize Jones of the team. He could still be a good coach, I'm saying that, but we have seen nothing that made him an outstanding coach.
Deshaun Kizer in 2015 was incredible.
Yeah.
And he was the quarterback's coach.
We hadn't seen anything before him. I agree with you there.
He had a lot of great weapons around him. Great running back, top-notch wide receiver.
He came in and was ready to play. I will agree with that.
So I don't think we can know for sure without more time about Tommy Rees and about Wimbush. Like my confidence is low.
Well,
but I still want to see what he can do from now until the bowl game.
Here's what I'm saying: find a guy that is worth.
Find a guy that can do both.
I don't think Tommy Rees. I think he could be a good coach down the road. I don't think he's ready to be Notre Dame's quarterback coach.
I know, yeah, he is really young, and everyone since he was a player was saying, oh, he's going to be a coach someday.
I agree.
And you just don't know until
they
do it.
It happened a lot quicker than we all thought it would.
Well, we knew he wasn't going to play in the NFL.
Yeah, but I mean, coming to Notre Dame, I feared he would coach somewhere, but he helped coach Philip Rivers for the Chargers, so.
I'm sure Philip Rivers...
I just think that the things you saw from Wimbush...
Brandon.
Was his confidence and his mechanics and stuff. And what we say is he needs somebody in the offseason. He needs somebody to work with him and do that. Maybe Rees can do that before the bowl game or this next summer. But I think that's stuff that a coach can help him, a good coach can help him with.
I mean, the passing game has issues. But it's even beyond the quarterback. The wide receivers and tight ends are not helping any either.
I agree.
And I do think it's mostly on Wimbush. And even in the game, in the Stanford game, there was a read option play, and Brandon Wimbush handed it off. And it was a third down play because they were coming off the field. He handed it off, and I don't remember if it was Adams or another running back was stopped behind the first down marker. And as they were running off to the sideline, Brian Kelly was yelling, that was 100% pull. He should have kept it. And so
Here's part of the confidence thing where I blame it on the receivers as well. We're just going to blame everybody today. But part of his thing is he's trying, he doesn't have that touch pass, and he's trying to force stuff and different. And it's because he does not trust his receivers.
No, I don't.
And tight ends.
Well, he might not trust him, but he's.
And so I think that he feels he's taking the pressure on himself, whether he should or not.
To make a perfect throw, because that's not happening either.
I know. But sometimes he just has to let his. He's a very good football. In practice, when there's no pressure, he can do it. That's why he was so good in practice, because there's no pressure, he can make those throws. But then when he felt like he needed to make those throws, needed to make a perfect throw so that the receiver or the tight end would catch it, he couldn't do it. And when they play up-tempo, when they play a little faster and don't let him think about it, he makes good throws. But the longer they take with plays and things, it seems like the worse he plays.
Okay, but I agree that there is improvement when they're playing with more tempo, but often when they're going with more tempo, usually it's more of a two-minute offense, and usually the defense is playing a little more of a prevent, not bringing as much pressure. He's not getting pressured either. I think that's part of it too. It's not just let's go. Although I think that there was improvement.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about all the bad coaches first, because I think, I'll just tell you straight up. I think Reese and Del Alexander, wide receiver coach, should both be replaced.
Do you think that, with the Del Alexander, because of the drops?
Just because of receiver play.
Well, but they've done pretty well in blocking. Maybe not excellent, but pretty good. And in fact, Equanimeous, his long touchdown run, Stevenson had a great block on that and made that possible.
Yeah, and the Stanford defender fell over. So,
but what I was getting at, Randall, are you saying it's the drops? Because the tight ends have also been dropping a ton of balls.
I know, and that's why I'm still trying to decide on
Chip Long.
They've been
tripping on balls. They're dropping them so much.
Here's what I say. This is my opinion on the coaching. Reese and Del Alexander should be replaced. And I'm still trying to decide on Chip Long and Brian Polian what they should do.
Let me give my thoughts on that then. Del Alexander, I've not been impressed with the wide receiver group, but I think they...
And here's something to add to it. Okay, they dropped the ball, and a lot of the times when Brandon Wimbush is running around, is in trouble, they're not helping him out.
You can't see that, though.
I've been to games.
Sometimes you can see if the wide receivers are trying to run free and get open, but you can't always see it.
And they don't fight for the ball. They're not aggressive. There's just things that... Okay, fine. The coach should at least be yelling at them or getting them to...
Okay, well, when we're talking about the different coaches and position groups, these are the things I want to keep in mind. Has the position group improved throughout the season? And have they met, exceeded, or been... Have they been lower than what you think the talent level for that group is?
Yeah.
And let's just go through... Let's just go through the different position groups then.
We'll quick give some yeah.
Because Randall, you mentioned Alexander and Reese. So the passing game has struggled, and those are the two big parts of the passing game, your quarterback and your wide receivers. But you've also been really critical of the offensive line too at times. So why not replace
Harry Heastin
as well?
Cuz I don't know Yeah, it's frustrating, but I don't know how much better. I think a lot of the problems at the offensive line, especially in this, well, they were missing guys. But it's the type of plays they were running. Everything just took too long. And a lot of it had to do with play calling as well.
Okay, and then what about the running backs?
But here's the thing. I've always wanted Harry Heastin. We rave and rave about Harry Heastin. And he's done a good job, but at the end of the day, we're still always kind of critical of his offensive line. They don't live up to expectations.
What about the running backs? They first half of the season, first three quarters of the season, were breaking records, rushing for 300-plus yards every game. It's incredible. But now the last few weeks of the season, their production is not gone, but it's way, way lower than what we've become used to. So do you think we should get rid of Todd Light?
Archer Denson
as well?
No. I think he's done a good job. The one thing I will be critical about that is, remember at the beginning of the season, we talked about how are they going to get all these running backs snaps.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's, see, I don't think this is on him, but there should have been more of a rotation. There's no Josh Adams should not have been out
Randall,
there in the Stanford game.
Randall, you are the one, you are always saying, you need one primary back.
I know.
Let him run the ball.
And
he needs to get in a rhythm.
And if he's not doing good, pull him. I don't want it switched off. You have three runs. Next guy come in, runs. I don't want to switch all that. But everybody saw that Josh Adams was not the same back in the last couple games. And even in this first half, you had Dexter Williams. He gets like one carry, and you saw what he could do. I mean, he saw a burst. Josh Adams wasn't doing that.
See, I agree with you, but I agree with you more as a whole.
I don't want it switching off all the time. What I'm saying is if he's not doing good, I would want him to go with the hot hand. I don't want him to like,
You don't really know until they get in a rhythm.
Well,
I'm being facetious here.
I know, but it was pretty obvious, and I don't think that's on Autry Denson.
I do agree with you. Running backs can't stay healthy if they're getting more than 20 carries a game.
Well, there's something else going on with Josh Adams. I don't know if he's that hurt.
I think he's dinged up in multiple places.
And I think the pressure got to him, but even when they showed him on the sidelines, like when I was rewatching the game, he was on the sideline and he did not look engaged. He looked completely out of it and was there sitting there chewing on his...
Neither did... I agree with you, and same thing with Brandon Wimbush, too.
Well, yeah, there was other players, too, but I'm saying Josh Adams.
And that goes back to, I think, motivation or inspiration.
So
and
if they would have known they could play in a conference championship, then they would have been all for it.
I think they would have been more excited if this game, which, I mean, Notre Dame isn't in the Pac-12 and whatever. But,
well,
Stanford, on the other hand, this game meant nothing to Stanford.
I know.
They looked like they were
it didn't.
Pretty excited to be playing.
Here's something else with Adams that is interesting. Archo is in there. Even when he was asked about talking football, like even when his roommates want to talk football, like when he doesn't want to. He said that he looks at it as his job.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know how much success you can have if you're just looking at it as your job in college.
I know what you mean. You want it to be your passion.
Because that's kind of what we thought with Corey Robinson, Jerry Tiller. Jerry Tiller stepped up and played amazing. But, you know, there are those guys that
too many other interests. But do you want to talk about work when you're not?
No, I get his point.
But
evening? What I'm saying is, I wonder, he was obviously the last while, ever since the Heisman talk started. He played a very good game after the first week, after the 33 trucking came out,
Wake
North
Forest.
Carolina State.
It came out right before North Carolina State. Yeah.
And after that, it just started to... I mean, he did good against Wake Forest.
Wake Forest, he had a really good game. He carried the ball. I think that was a game where he carried it 27 times.
Yeah. And then it just started. But maybe he's just injured.
I think he's just injured. But
here's the thing.
We got off track. We want to talk about the different position groups and the coaches. And have they met expectations, exceeded it, or have they been lower than expectations, and have they gotten better throughout the course of the season? So, way back, offensive line. I think they've exceeded expectations. As a whole for this season, the running game isn't opening up the lanes that it was, but one reason for that is just motivation and a lack of the quarterback position to be able to make a play. I think the team is handicapped by it, and I think Brandon Wimbush can. I think he has the ability to be a very effective passer, and I hope that he does. I hope he makes strides again in this offseason heading into the bowl game, and then I hope he's a starter next year, because the talent that he has, I think he gives Notre Dame an excellent shot at winning games.
Tell me when you want me to insert those high school stats. Versus the next great quarterback.
Well, we're talking about the offensive line.
I know.
Line.
That's why I'm not.
Okay.
I agree.
I think they exceeded it. Whenever Notre Dame's going to replace two starters, they're going to take a step back. They're going to take a step back next year. They're not going to be as dominant of a running or as an offensive line as they have been this year or as they were in 2015.
I think I agree. I think they did very well. I think it was more to do with, especially here at the end, it was more to do with the plays that were called and what they were asked to do versus them, how they were actually playing. They did make some mental mistakes in this game that cost them against Stanford, but I think a lot of their play had to do with what they were asked to do.
So you're fine with keeping Harry?
Yeah.
All right, running backs. Notre Dame hasn't been this successful running the football in forever. So I was kind of joking with you about it, that they haven't been as productive in the running game, and they won't be as productive in the running game next year. But I definitely, Autry Denson, I think.
Before Denson was coaching, we were begging for a player to get 100 yards in a game. Now we have multiple running backs doing it.
I know. Autry Denson, this unit has exceeded expectations again, a lot like they did in 2015.
We weren't expecting to talk Josh Adams as a Heisman.
No. But I did think he was a special running back, a special college running back.
Yeah.
All right, wide receivers.
I think Del Alexander needs to be replaced.
Okay. Expectations going into this year, I think the best wide receiver out of this group, I think, is Kevin Stefferson, and he was out for the first quarter of the season. When he came back, it took him a little bit to get into it, but since he is back, he has elevated the group as a whole. But Equanimeous took a step back from what he was able to do in 2015. And I know part of this also, the passes aren't as accurate as they had been.
Yeah.
Chase Claypool, definitely more involved than he was a year ago, but didn't take a big step like he needed to help the quarterback position and help the passing game. So I agree with you. This has been a disappointment. The wide receiver group as a whole, they've been good in blocking, in run blocking, and in blocking for the wide receivers after the catch.
And the guys that started the season, I mean, you had Freddie Canteen, Cam Smith, Chris Fink was starting at one point. I mean, none of these guys Purdue, which we expected too much from Cam Smith, I think.
Yeah.
And he was injured, but we expect too much from him. And it was shocking all along why Freddie Canteen was named to start, but it's because of these other guys not stepping up.
But Equanimeous, I don't think I had too high expectations for Equanimeous. I think he is.
He should have done a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of that is being more aggressive, making the catches that he needs to. Getting jump balls, and we haven't seen any of that. I think it's going to hurt Notre Dame's chances to get his younger brother, Amon-Ra. I mean, honestly, why at this point, what you see from the wide receivers at Notre Dame, why would you want to go to Notre Dame as a wide receiver?
There's probably going to be about 10 catchable balls thrown per game. No,
I think it'll get better.
I'm exaggerating
but,
a little bit.
But even just the, I don't know. I'm just saying from the coaching standpoint, the guys aren't getting better. They're not having the breakout season. They're not.
I do agree with you on this one. I do think Della Alexander has not elevated the wide receiver group.
Yeah.
We've talked about enough. Let's not go in circles. Tight ends, Chip Long, the tight end unit, they've been used a lot, but they haven't been nearly as productive. They've been productive, but they've missed on too many opportunities, and they have been overthrown at times, but Alize Mack has not.
He's basically been at,
he didn't play. I don't think he took a snap in the Stanford game.
There was one shot of him on a exercise bike on the sideline, but Wisher took his snaps in this game. They didn't really take a step back because they weren't producing before. So technically, they kind of took a step forward because they produced.
I think they took a step forward, but they were blindfolded. And so it was progress, but it wasn't nearly the amount of... There was still a lot more they could have taken.
They didn't meet expectations.
They did not meet expectations.
I will say, though, you were right. I didn't think the freshmen were going to play. And they both played this year, so.
They did play. They didn't catch the amount of touchdown passes I expected.
I don't think any of the tight ends met any expectations.
All right, quarterback. From a running perspective, Brandon Wimbush exceeded my expectations by a lot. He set rushing touchdown records for a quarterback in a single season. And he adds, even as bad at passing as he has been, he helped lead one of the most efficient offenses in the country. I mean, Notre Dame was, I think they were number 12 with offensive efficiency.
I'm not even sure.
I'm not sure where they're at right now. But it's incredible what he's been able to do. And if he can add just a solid passing attack of, you know, 15 for 20, and if he can just get close, if he can get stay over closer to 55 or 60% of his passes, it'd be incredible. And he's been pretty much turnover free, except in some of these big games. Two interceptions against Stanford, and how many was it against Miami? Two against Miami as well, and a fumble.
Yeah.
So, in some of the biggest moments is when the turnovers have been an issue for him. And even, yeah.
He has 6 interceptions on the season.
And 4 of those have just been here in the last... At one point during the game, they showed his first 200 passes, he had one interception... Or 2 interceptions, and then in the last 55 passes, he had 4 or something like that. But it's been against Miami and then Navy and now Stanford, so 2 really solid teams in that time, too. But, so where do you put his performance, or where do you put Tommy Rees, quarterback's coach? I mean, the rushing game has been excellent. Think of what Tommy would have been if he would have been able to run the football.
If he would have had a running game like this?
Well, if he would have been able to run,
gotcha. Well, I don't give Tommy Rees a good grade because a lot of Wimbush's issues are his confidence and his technique, which go hand in hand. And that's something that a coach should be helping him with.
I am not with you as far as replace Rees today. I would want to see one more year. And I know this is the most important position. I mean, as far as a single, I mean, this is,
yeah.
I know we talk about offensive line, and yes, they are, but if you have really good quarterback play, you can overcome a lot of other shortcomings on your team.
Yeah.
So I would want to see one more year.
He's done better. The first guy we get rid of is Del Alexander, and then it would be Tommy Rees, I think. I just think you could,
and here's what's weird. I mean, you see, talking about confidence. I mean, when Ian Book comes in here into the game, I mean, he's full of confidence, but he just doesn't always see things either that he's supposed to see. But the confidence is there. He's slinging the ball around.
Well, that's what I mean. Wimbush can make the plays.
Yeah,
it's just a matter of convincing him that he can make those, and. I guess some of it could be on Chip Long is, you know, speeding things up where he doesn't have to think, where he doesn't have time to think about it. But maybe the other positions are hindering that as well.
All right. We talked about the offensive position groups. Let's talk about the offensive coordinator, Chip Long. I know people are critical. People will always be critical of play calling even if there is a touchdown scored in every drive. People will always be critical of play calling and the offense. And on the other side, if there's a score given up, they'll be critical of things there too, even if it's just 7 points. So there's always going to be critics, and for good reason, because you can always take steps to improve something. But you can't take away that Notre Dame's rushing attack is one of the most productive rushing attacks at Notre Dame. It has been excellent most of the year at wearing teams down. I think Stanford did to Notre Dame what Notre Dame's just been doing to other teams, where they were able, with short field positions, they just broke the will of the Notre Dame defense and were able to move the ball and break the heart of Notre Dame players. But back to Notre Dame, offensively, rushing, overall, the offensive attack.
You talking about the play calling or just...
The offense as a whole. I mean, I guess start with, is the offense, has it met expectations, or is it a little bit better than you expected as a whole? Because for me, when I look at the whole season, it's much better. It's much more productive than what I expected. Notre Dame is scoring.
I would say they had a good season. But if you look at the season from the start to the finish, I think they
sputtered.
Yeah.
That I completely...
Season as a whole, yes, but they went backwards.
One thing to look at as far as how explosive is an offense's yards per play, and in 2015 it was one of the most prolific offenses. You had Will Fuller, you had a great running attack. It was incredible. And Notre Dame was averaging 7 yards per play, 7.02. In 2016, that was down almost a full yard, 6.07. Here in 2017, it's right in between there at 6.42. So definitely more explosive than it was last year. Not quite to the level it was in 2015. But one thing that really that gives me a lot of hope is that Chip Long is a young coach. He hasn't been an offensive coordinator or play caller for very long. And I think he can learn more quickly than a coach that's been doing it for, 20 years.
Well, that's what you mentioned, not having done it very much. I think that's kind of where I think Chip's long inexperience, having only been an offensive coordinator, this only being his second year as an offensive coordinator and calling plays, I think that kind of started to show at the beginning of the season. He could come out the first part of the year, teams didn't know what he was going to do, but once teams knew, they didn't adjust well to what teams were giving them, and he did learn to give Wimbush some easier throws to start the game, which didn't help either, but I think just the, especially versus Stanford, we saw in Miami, Stanford, even Navy, everything just took too long to happen. The offense was slower, and it was the type of plays they were running. The line pulling, just all the things they were doing, it was not, I think that's why they lost the big games. All this stuff worked against the
less athletic,
smaller teams, but when you got to the big games, you couldn't do this.
I disagree with you, Randall, because even against Miami and definitely against Stanford, there were opportunities there for on the offensive side of the ball for players to make plays, and either the passes were overthrown, and sometimes the offensive player was able to get two hands on it, but it was either very, very low or it was behind, and the defender was able to get a hand on it and help swat it out. And so,
I agree.
If you're able to connect on those, that helps. That freezes and slows down the defense too.
Yeah, but if you have success running the ball, like they're being at the beginning of the year, that's why Brandon Wimbush looked much better as a passer. Because they had success running the ball.
But they were going against.
And the part of the reason they didn't have as much success running the ball against the good teams is because they were trying these tricky schemes, pulling the line, doing all this and that, instead of just running the ball straight ahead. And the Josh Adams, they were often tackled before they had a chance to make any play. They were waiting for things to open up and happen, and you can't do that against good teams.
Are you talking about Stanford in particular?
And Miami. Those are the two.
I don't remember exactly always what happened, but there's too many. I mean, we saw a couple of times Brian Kelly talked about Brandon Wimbush didn't always make the right call. He talked about it in the Miami game, and he said it on the sideline on the 1/3 down play where Brandon Wimbush was running off. So and that comes down to coaching too, having your quarterback make the right reads. But I just don't think changing things up so much where it's like, well, clearly all you need to do is just run downhill, because Stanford at times was loading the box. I mean, where they had, it was pretty much one-on-one coverage on two or three wide receivers, and everyone else was on the box.
Yeah, but you can at least pick up some yards. The way Notre Dame was doing it was a loss or no yards. Josh Adams is a big back. And if you don't, like, wait around, if you use, like, you saw with Dexter Williams, you just get a couple yards every time.
Well, Dexter Williams only ran, though, like, one time.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, no, he didn't. It was more than, it was at least twice.
I'm just saying, you're saying.
He had three for 21. Average seven.
You're still basing, and some of those you're basing three plays and saying if they would have done that exact same thing for all of Josh Adams.
Because those weren't all just straight ahead runs. Some of those were tossed, you pitched it out to him and just different things like that. But they could pick up yards versus they were waiting for a play to happen. You saw the one play in particular, you saw Josh Adams, the line pulled to the one side. Josh Adams was waiting for that gap. Didn't happen. He tried to go through there. If he'd have just gone left, he would have picked up yards.
Out around the edge, I mean, just on the outside.
Kind of. No, the whole line, everybody had moved.
Oh.
Had moved to the right. The linemen, Nelson and McClinchy, had moved to the right, and they were supposed to create a gap, and Josh Adams is waiting. He just runs ahead and runs right into them when he could have gone left and could have got yards.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just happened too slow. With all that stuff they were doing.
But if you run with power, if you're pulling a guard or...
And that doesn't always work either. I mean, we saw Stanford put 30 guys on the line and Notre Dame was able to get through. So that doesn't always work either.
Yeah.
But mix it up some more. And here's what I have, what I'm questioning about the long, why things didn't experience. Brian Kelly, I think he handed over too much. He obviously let Chip Long run the offense. Do you remember last year, Brian Kelly was not calling plays. But remember they scripted 20 plays. Was it like 20 or 30 plays?
Was it 20? That many? I don't think it was 30.
I think it was 20. They might not have said for sure, but they scripted plays going into the game. Notre Dame had its fastest start. It seemed like they scored every first possession of the game.
Are you sure that's true?
They scored. I remember talking about how they're finally, we don't have to worry about these fast starts. And then when they got away from the scripted plays is when things fell apart, and that's when teams – that's why Notre Dame often got this lead, and then going to third in the second half, they fell behind and lost their lead. And that was a complaint last year.
How do you know Notre Dame isn't scripting – that Chip Long isn't scripting plays?
They might be.
You're just saying they're not.
But I'd want to know – we'll never know how much Brian Kelly is involved with that part versus last year. But this is obviously Chip Long's offense. He was calling the plays, and it was his style. They need to get some... I don't know how much Brian Kelly is involved, but they need to get back to a little more of what they did in the game plan last year.
Randall. You were such a critic last year of Brian Kelly and the offense and how awful it was.
After the scripted plays. I agree. No... I like that Chip Long, that somebody else is calling the plays versus Brian Kelly because we can run the ball.
And Notre Dame is averaging 30.
But they have slow starts. Look how many times they punt. They don't have the fast starts they did last year. The game plan is, and then they don't adjust. They didn't adjust last year either. That's why they lost games, because they couldn't make adjustments and couldn't hold on to the lead, which was part of the defense too. But... somehow they got a. This is still Brian Kelly's team. I think he should still be the head coach. Something's got to happen there. He's got to figure out what they did last year in the first. Just some things like that.
Because
if Notre Dame would come out to a fast start like that against Stanford, they've had opportunities and they haven't been able to convert.
Yeah. I know points per game isn't the. I don't think it's the best way to indicate how good your offense is, because you don't know how many possessions you have, and it changes from game to game, from team to team, as far as within the same year and from year to year. But this is the most points per game Notre Dame has scored since 2008.
Yeah. So here's the thing. If you look at the season overall, they did a good job.
Yeah.
They just went backwards. And I think when it comes down to it, I think the overall thing is that it was a long season, and Notre Dame, the players kind of had a tendency, you know, if you do something for so long, it's a habit. It's hard to switch over. And I think with the fatigue, just the mental part of it is why they had some lapses here at the end of the year. This new regime, whatever you want to call it, the complete makeover that Brian Kelly had this year, it's going to take more than 1 year.
And you know what worries me is that this makeover looked really pretty and looked flawless.
And then next year,
up until, you know, a quarter into the Miami game, I'm a little, and it looks like it's, I don't know, I'm a little concerned that this next off season, guys can get back on board, and that Notre Dame can do more. Hopefully, they can do more than just do the same thing. Hopefully, they can take a step forward. And I am worried.
They took a step forward this year.
I know they did. I'm just worried they're not going to be able to take another step forward, because I don't think expectations for themselves was close to met. I think that the expectations were a championship or a playoff, into the playoff. They didn't do that. And I'm just worried that, I don't know, they're going to lose a lot of leadership.
I don't know. We have a long offseason to discuss it.
I know.
But the defensive side, the coaches, I'm not going to complain about any of them.
And we talked about defensive backs was a concern for most of the Brian Van Gorder era, and Todd Light came
and
on.
And I was critical of Todd Light.
And he was also a new coach. And so I think new coaches can learn quicker. And it helps if your defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator or head coach can help you in the learning process. And I think that was one thing that happened this year with Todd Light. I think that he's a better coach, but it also helped having Elko there. And I don't know if Brian Kelly took more of a role with him particular, but we know that he was more spread across the entire team, not just with the offense.
Well, I think a big difference, it made Todd Light look better with the better defensive line. And just the front seven were playing a lot better, which helps make the safety. Then you don't have to worry about the safeties. Yeah. The reason we didn't hear too much from the safeties all year, it didn't see much then, is because we didn't need to. Because the defensive line played much better. The linebackers played better. And so there was less pressure on the safeties. And so they didn't look as bad. Last year, everything was just getting through the line. And they had to depend on the safeties, and they couldn't get it done. So I think on the defensive side, I mean, yeah.
Definitely, I do want to mention Elston, defensive line. Like, that's one of the most improved positions on the entire team.
We weren't expecting the players he had. We were like, he doesn't have the talent to...
Well, I mean, Dalen Hayes is a year older. You had some old guys there. Jay Hayes, who hadn't really done anything, but did have a really productive year. You had talent with, you had talent with Andrew Trimbetti, you know, as a freshman. There was flashes, Tillery. And then there was some up and down. You definitely had talent with Tillery. Just weren't sure if you'd be able to get it out of him. And I think he has done a great job of motivating, inspiring that position group. Yeah. Brian Kelly needs to inspire, motivate the whole team, and whoever Alexander needs to find a way to motivate and get the wide receivers playing higher than what they think they're capable, they need to be playing, well, clearly higher than what they're playing right now. He needs to get them to play at a higher level than even they think they can reach.
Yeah,
and I don't expect it to happen in game one, but I want to see some progress throughout the course of a year. Okay. Anything else from the defensive coaches? Linebackers?
Clark Lee.
There we had our new, new
Clark
coach.
Clark Lee was doing good. I mean,
Drew Tranquil had an excellent year. Tavon Coney is a perfect example of someone who has showed, I mean, he was way more productive in the second half than he was in the first half.
Yeah.
And there's a guy,
and by the way,
who
he
might
could
not
leave.
Yeah, there's a guy who might not be coming back.
Yeah. I think he will, but he does.
I don't know.
It all of a sudden hit me, like, he actually could leave. But it's just, Drew Tranquil did mention after the game, he said he never saw in the Stanford game, he did not see any looks that they hadn't practiced in, that they hadn't gone through in practice. And it would just came down to executing. Who knows? I mean, it's just a small thing. That's why I'm saying that it's kind of that, this is where the grit comes in, and they obviously didn't have enough of it. But, you know, some of the big plays, Morgan started out hot, and then he missed one tackle, and it turned into a big play. Like, it only takes one here and there. And that's where Notre Dame needs to continue to improve. And I think they will get better with the strength and conditioning and with the coach that they can keep getting better, where that one bad play doesn't happen as often, or they can make it look not as bad. I mean,
and with better,
it's kind of like
with better coaching, with better development, with better recruiting, soon you have more depth. And when a player is struggling for a series or for a game or gets injured, you can replace him with a quality backup.
Yeah.
And I think Notre Dame has quality backups at a couple position groups, but they don't at wide receiver. They had four guys at linebacker. They don't at safety. And defensive line, I mean, they were relying on freshmen.
Yeah.
On the interior anyway. They had some old guys on the outside.
One more coach to talk about with Brian Polian, special teams.
Yeah. Special teams to me can change the game, because field position is huge. And if you have 40 yards to go, I don't know what the percentage is, but I mean, there's a very good chance you're at least going to get a field goal.
Yeah.
Versus if you're at the 10 yard line, it's tough to get points if you're starting out inside the 10. So it definitely, I think it is a big deal. But I'm more concerned, and I want the focus to be on the defense and the offense. I'm fine with calling a fair catch on punts. I'd much rather do that than fumble it.
Well,
you know what, Randall? I was going to ask you. I was going to look up where Notre Dame ranks in their punt return.
See, I think Polian, he's doing a great job at recruiting. I think they should have spent the money on the quarterback. Well, then you wouldn't have Polian, period. But they can get a lot better at the special teams. When I heard that Polian was coming in, they were paying a coach just to be the special teams coach. I expect a lot more out of the special teams than what we got this year.
Round, who do you think, would USC, do you think they'd have a pretty good punt return unit?
I have no idea.
I'm just picking a random. I just wanted to pick a random team to look at here.
I haven't watched enough of the other teams. I mean, I would expect them to. They usually have some explosive player returning punts.
All right. Notre Dame, Chris Fink is the only player that's returned a punt. He's averaging 6.5 yards per return. And USC, they've had a bunch of different guys return punts. They're averaging 12.89. They have two touchdowns.
Yeah.
So there definitely is.
Well,
there definitely is room for improvement there.
I mean, so I'm not sure. I think the money should be spent on a quarterback coach versus special teams, because.
Yeah, I would much rather get the passing game figured out and have that the focus.
Was bad, it's just hard to tell. But it could. I expect a lot more from the special teams than what we got this year.
I did too.
But going back, looking at all the different positions, this game, I think Stanford came down to just small errors here and there where Notre Dame just killed themselves. You know, you saw Brandon Wimbush could have had a first down, but he ran to Alex Bars. Josh Adams could have had a first down, but he tripped on his own feet coming out of the backfield. And then both those ended up punting the ball. that one time on their 19-yard line, they had two penalties right away. That's even from McGlinchey, your senior fifth-year senior captain. And Stefferson, I think, had the false start on that. And instantly, you're backed up. You had 19 yards to go. And then just Brandon Wimbush, the interceptions, both were just bad interceptions. And then the small thing on the defense, you know, they had pass interference.
But then also missed opportunities, too, because there were open receivers that Brandon couldn't hit, and there were balls that would have been tough catches but could have been made.
Yeah. Oh, he had, yeah. There was guys open on at least the one interception when he threw it to Smythe, tried to throw it to Smythe. There was guys open. But then defense, you know, a missed tackle here and there, and it seemed like Costello, their quarterback, played in Crow. His throws were right on. I mean, every throw, it seemed like the guy just caught the ball and Notre Dame guys were all over him. They were perfect throws. And I'm not going to be too critical because there wasn't too much more the defenders could do because they were right there.
I agree. I think that Julian Love was asked to do a lot. It looked like he was often in man coverage, and Notre Dame often just had one safety over the top to help. And he played very well. He didn't get called for pass interference. Knocked at least one pass down.
And some of the calls, pass interference calls, were pathetic. But then there were others that should have been called that were worse that didn't get called. So there were just small things here and there that hurt. It wasn't. The good thing is Stanford isn't necessarily the better team. They played one of their best games. Shaw even said it's probably their best game of the year. That's what's so frustrating. But their best game of the year, and Miami the same way.
And that's what it comes back to, the faceless opponent.
And I mean, that's why Notre Dame should be motivated every game, is because they know they're getting the best out of every
team.
And
this didn't even matter to Stanford, this game.
I know.
What is Shaw doing to motivate his players?
Well, I guess there was no pressure on Stanford. That's why they played so good.
I think it's more than just no. I don't know.
But there's so many small things and just mental breakdowns in this game. I think it's been a long season. We're seeing the results of Brian Kelly not making the decisions that he did this last offseason a year earlier when they should have been made.
So, Randall, will you be calling for Brian Kelly's head if next season Alexander and Tommy Rees are still on the coaching staff?
No.
I do.
Those are my suggestions.
Yeah.
But
I would not be disappointed. I know I had said that I would give, if it were me, I would give Tommy Rees another year.
Yeah.
But I would not be disappointed if Tommy Rees would be replaced.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be an awful decision. But they're going to need to, I mean, Elston is probably going to move on. Brian Kelly really alluded to it really heavily.
This year?
He alluded to it in the offseason.
I know. Maybe. I don't think he will.
Oh, man. As well as the defensive line was playing.
Well, might as well, the way some of the coaching jobs are going right now in college football, you might as well try it, just like Tennessee, and back out and potentially get paid $20 million and never having gone to the school. So, anyway, here's one thing I want to – here's the other thing. When you talk about people want to replace Brian Kelly, think about who you're going to replace him with. Prime example, that Notre Dame is not the job it used to be. I mean, and some of it is because Notre Dame is the one, but a lot of it is because other schools are so much better. You know what I mean? Like, there's bigger jobs out there. It used to be Notre Dame was the big job. Now there's other schools that are the big jobs as well. And you can go there and there's not as much pressure from Notre Dame.
And it's easier to recruit. You don't have to recruit the country. You can recruit your area, your state.
Yeah.
And with a lot of schools.
So what I'm saying, I'm pretty sure Nebraska right now wishes they would have Bo Pelini as their coach. The coach that only won 9 games a year. They just fired the guy that replaced him because he couldn't do it. He couldn't even win 9 games a year. I think Texas A&M is doing the same thing. They got rid of Kevin Sumlin. I think they're doing the same thing. And if Notre Dame...
Notre Dame could do much worse than Brian Kelly.
You got to think about that part.
We could have Charlie Weiss again, or Willingham.
Listen, we were talking about before, the only way, if you stop and think about it, the only way any football fan, any team is ever going to be happy is if you win a championship.
So that's one fan base out of every year.
And there's no team that keeps doing it every year. I mean, Alabama has been doing it like every other year, whatever they've been doing. They have won multiple ones, but you don't think their fan base is fussing right now? It's tough because you want to win. Trust me, I know. I've been a Cubs fan, so.
Well, if you'd be.
But it does make it easy. This year doesn't seem as bad for the Cubs because they just won a World Series.
I just became a Cubs fan last year, right around when the playoffs were starting. I've just kept my fanatical side in the closet. Yeah. Until last year.
But it was a tough loss because a couple weeks ago we were talking about going undefeated the rest of the year. And that quickly changed.
Yeah. The times, they are a-changing.
But here's something else. Notre Dame set a record, a Notre Dame record. They had two pass touchdowns that went for 75-plus yards. That's never been done before at Notre Dame.
Hold it.
So
that is surprising.
This horrible passing offense
is also setting records.
Is setting records.
All right. Did you want to talk more about the Stanford game in particular? We didn't really go over the numbers, but I guess there's a few things we should mention. Equanimeous bounced back and had a big game. 5 catches, over 100 yards, 1 touchdown. And again, I think that was the best play of the season, that his 75-yard scamper into the end zone. Good blocking speed by Kevin Stefferson. Showed off some speed. Stefferson had a great game again, too. 3 catches, also over 100 yards, and a touchdown. And then anything else to mention? The running game. One thing I did like about, Brandon Wimbush, he was productive again on the ground, and I liked that seemed to be a little more of an emphasis where it didn't seem to be nearly enough of an emphasis against Miami, and that may have been on him just not making the right read to keep it often enough.
Here's what we're talking about him. I was going to mention this earlier, but everybody's looking on to Phil Dracovic.
Yeah.
And the huge numbers he's putting up.
They're probably insane. Never before. High school numbers that have never been duplicated before.
Here's comparing them to Brandon Wimbush's high school numbers. Dracovic.
And are these senior season or total high school?
This is just senior year.
Okay.
100 passing attempts, 253 passing attempts, 191 completions for Dracovic. Wimbush, 265 passing attempts, 192 completions. Wimbush was 72%. Dracovic is 75%.
So he's way more accurate, Randall.
Dracovic has 33 passing touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Wimbush, 37 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Dracovic, I don't have his yards, but they're the same. Yeah. And Wimbush had better rushing numbers. He had another 9 touchdowns on the ground.
And that's something, too. Ian Book, who is not the slowest person in the world, and he can move, but you still saw when he tried to run, he's not nearly the weapon as a runner as what Wimbush is when he was in there for a series or for part of that series.
So here's the thing. Dracovic is putting, I'm not going to take that away, he's putting up incredible numbers. Brandon Wimbush's were about identical to his.
If you want Notre Dame to get to the playoff as fast as possible, it's not going to be with a freshman quarterback. It's going to be at Rennell. that was a redshirt freshman in 2012.
Exactly.
It's going to be with Wimbush being consistent as a passer.
And I think he can get there.
I think he can, too. I'm less confident, but I think he can.
Well, we saw glimpses of it.
Yeah. But and being an incredible weapon on the ground And I do think Dracovic is going to be a starter at Notre Dame. I mean,
oh, I do too.
He's definitely, yeah, incredible talent as well. All right, well, yeah, that is interesting, and it keeps things in perspective a little bit.
Quick things on the defensive side. The defensive line played incredible. I was impressed how Notre Dame would get through all those offensive linemen for Stanford. I was shocked. We always talk about the jumbo package that Stanford has, and Notre Dame, it didn't matter. Notre Dame got through there.
Well,
and they held Bryce Love. He did end up with 125 yards.
He had 20 carries, 125 yards, a long of 31 yards.
And he's banged up. So that kind of made Josh Adams look a little worse because Bryce Love was still doing it. The injuries are not going to compare the injuries, but Notre Dame did a good job until there at the end. They let him get out a couple times, but for the most part, they did a good job against him. The linebackers, I thought Morgan played a really good game, especially there at the beginning. Azmir Bilal was in there, and that Drew Tranquil actually played safety for a little bit, and they brought in Azmir Bilal to kind of bring in bigger guys for this big Stanford team.
Here's, I think, what it shows. Stanford had a really good rushing attack, but Notre Dame held them to 4 yards per carry. The difference was that they were able to get very productive play and turnover-free play out of their quarterback. 14 of 22, 176 yards, so not even as many yards as what Brandon Wimbush passed for. He had almost 250, but it was way more efficient and had 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions.
Yeah. And I will say, this team kind of, Notre Dame offense came out kind of like how they expected, because this was more the style of game that Notre Dame likes to play. They weren't worried about the speed. It was about, and so the offense came out, the two running backs, excuse me, and the two tight ends, the things they did was more what they did at the beginning of the year, and we kind of expected them to do that, and they were moving the ball. So they can do that. Anyways.
There's a few things I wanted to note yet, Randall. Number one, I forgot to mention earlier, when we were talking about the tempo of Chip Long and his offense, tempo is different. I mean, it's not just going snapping the ball as fast as you can every single time. I mean, that is tempo, and that is one way to do it. But the way that Chip Long does it usually is after a big play, getting up to the line as quickly as possible before the defense can get set, because they're reeling, they're backpedaling, getting back to line of scrimmage, and then running a play soon after that. And for people who think that Chip Long ran twice as many plays at Memphis last year as what he's doing this year, that's not the case. They ran, on average, 74 plays per game last year, and they're running 71 at Notre Dame this year. Now, it's different depending who you're playing. And they had a couple similar opponents. They both had Temple and Navy, so there were some similar opponents in there. But I know it's not apples for apples. Is that the right saying, or is that just the game? It's not the exact same thing, but yeah. That was one of the easiest ways I could come up with to do a comparison. And then one thing I did get right is that I didn't think Love would play, but in the interview with Hank Waddles, I did say, I do think if he plays that Stanford wins the game.
Well, you were right.
Doesn't make me feel good, but.
Is this one of our longest podcasts today?
Yeah, by far.
Oh, the winner of the score prediction.
If anyone's still listening.
Joey Yanto won, and his score prediction, I had it written down.
I'm surprised that Mr. Dave didn't win.
He predicted 27-20, so he had Notre Dame score right, and he had predicted 27 for Stanford.
All right, congratulations. We'll be sending out your discount code to use at Main Street Roasters. I think it's the best roasted coffee, and I drink their coffee several times a week at their coffee shop here in Napanee. Love it. MainStreetRoasters.com. You can follow them on Instagram and on Twitter, and you can order their coffee online as well. MainStreetRoasters.com.
And the coaches did stay out on the West Coast and are recruiting guys, visiting them. We'll maybe get into that later, but they are visiting a bunch of guys this week. And there's early signing period, so on December 20th is signing day. So that'll keep things interesting
The bowl game. About 3 weeks.
Yeah. So, and Notre Dame has currently have 6 commitments that are planned to enroll early.
Okay.
So there's a couple guys they're still going after that are planned to enroll early wherever they enroll. So just have to wait and see if Notre Dame lands those guys. So
will they be able to play in the bowl game?
They should. We'll be able to get into a little more detail with that.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you guys for listening. I hope you enjoyed this season. For the most part, it was gradual excitement up, up, up. And then the last month, there have been some disappointments. But it has been a good season. It's much better than 4-8. Yeah. Notre Dame's going to a bowl game. There's some good news in the recruiting world going on. And there is at least reason to believe that Notre Dame is going to have another good team next year.
Yeah.
There's reason to be skeptical, but I think there's reason to believe as well that things are headed in the right direction. So stay optimistic, stay tuned, and we'll see what we get from here on out in the Notre Dame Bowl game and for 2018. So until next time, go Irish.
Go Irish.